speak to everyone, and that I might be amazed by your greatness and your love of your creation. You do not reject us. You do not. You will not leave us or forsake us like orphans. Your love is constant. And I thank you, Lord, over the years that you have been the strong tower that you have been in my life. Thank you, Abba, in the name of Yeshua. I do want to say thanks be to the Lord that I am here for. Glad that I'm here, alive, to see it. And I do thank the Lord for all my brothers and sisters who have encouraged me through a lot of thick, messy things, and they still take place. But you know, that doesn't change who God is. That doesn't change that he calls, that he, let me take a look at the notes, he separates, he sanctifies, he anoints, he consecrates, and he uses the broken vessels that we are and fills and restores and brings about his goodness, his righteousness, his truth in us. And I do just want to say one thing, that years ago, God took two very imperfect lives and led us to a couple who loved God and showed it throughout our lives in deed, the things that they had poured themselves out for was that God would bring about his plan for Amy and I's life. And they walked the walk and didn't just talk the talk. And we saw two people who loved God more than life. So to the glory of God, I would like to just blow the shofar if I can. The horn of our salvation is mighty, full of strength, and is able to defeat many Philistines. So I think I said in the back, I kind of, it was a late Shabbat evening, and I kind of listened to the audio off the computer, and in Numbers chapter 4, it listed God speaking to Moses to take, take a census. He spoke to Moses and Aaron to take a census of the sons of Kohath from the sons of Levi, among the sons of Levi, by their families and by their ancestral households, everyone from 30 years of age to 50, all who will come to serve doing the work in the tent of meeting. So, that just goes to show you, God doesn't just call the young, 30 years of age to 50. He actually loves us and desires that we serve him and give him glory through our service. So, I didn't, God loves his people, the people he called, set aside, sanctified. He anointed them. He desired that they would be his own and that they would cover the earth, conquer sin and death and their enemies. And I think they did a pretty poor job of actually being obedient, but he still did not cast them aside. He still loved them. He still desired them as his very own precious people, the apple of his eye. And he loves us to that extent also. I wrote only a few notes down, and I really want to go to Judges. There's a lot I don't understand, but I can trust that God has it all figured out. Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel. Okay. We are somewhere around before Samuel, is that right? Yep. Judges 13, 2 to 25 was the portion. Sticky thin pages. Some of my thoughts were that even though it said that Israel again done evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord caused them, I better read it, caused them to be taken over by the Philistines, I think, for 40 years, it says. Funny thing that God loved them so much. He didn't give them over to the Philistines so that they would be eradicated from the earth, be slaves to them forever. He gave them over to the Philistines because they had again done evil in his sight. God knows our condition. He knows what sin has done. Through one man came sin and death, but through another, his Messiah, came life and victory. So even though that they were doing such evil, God raised up a man who was born of a childless woman, and used this man. He had a purpose. He took the Nazarite vows. He raised him up, had a plan for his life to do certain things, and that was to deliver Israel from the Philistines. The thing is, God set it up so that they were handed over to the Philistines, and he set it up that they would be delivered from the Philistines, but out of that Israel would learn obedience in what they suffered. And I think that is same with us, that he wants us to learn obedience, and he doesn't want us to suffer because of sin, but he will cause us to learn from those sufferings, and he wants to give victory to us in our lives, to not listen to the enemy's taunts, to the lies, and also that we would learn his wisdom, learn his ways. I look at a man who's God caused his spirit to come upon, and he was very powerful. I can't recall exactly, but I think with one jawbone he kills 1,000 Philistines or something. I don't know how many, but you know, God is mighty in our midst. He used Samson to deliver his people, and you know, a chapter of God's plan in Israel's life was being unfolded. So I saw, though, a man who did some things that really put him in a place not so great, God still used him. And in the end, I don't think that Samson lived his life in vain. I think God's purposes were accomplished. I think he suffered because of some of the things that he made up his own mind to do. But I think all in all, God created this man for his purpose. And I think I just want to not only encourage myself, but for everyone. I'm thinking of so many things, but the road to life being narrow. We need one another. No matter our shortcomings, no matter, I need to think differently about myself, my life, and who God is, and how great is our God, as Judah puts it. You know, it's amazing thing, God's love that continuously stands firm throughout our lives, and he gives us people in our lives. It's a short time, but we can see glimpses of what God is doing and where He is taking us. He encourages us through the lives of many who've laid their lives down for the kingdom of God and for the word to go forth that Messiah has come, Messiah has risen. There is salvation. Now is the time of salvation. God desires that none would perish. I believe that with all my heart. No matter how many people perish, He doesn't desire that. But we have many brothers and sisters who have come and lived among us and have gone to be with our Father. They've been a testimony of His goodness, of His greatness, of His great love poured out through them by His Spirit. They are not ashamed. They were not ashamed. We are not ashamed of God's gospel to save and to complete that work that He began in us. So I want to just encourage myself and you that God has great things to bring about, and we are part of that. So I saw in a man, though he often strayed, that God was mighty through his life, and that God will not give up on us. He seeks a people for himself. He seeks a people who will see how much he loves them, how merciful he is towards us. And, you know, this is what I've seen in the scriptures, I'm just glad I serve such a God, a Father. I see that all who would come to know our Father and His Messiah, that there is none that He desires to be fatherless in this life, because He desires to be our Father. So I'll just say thank you for the opportunity to say that. I do want to read this. This is a worship song that we sing, and it's only part of a prayer, but it speaks in thousands of words. We are a moment. You, Lord God, are forever. Lord of the ages, God before time. We are a vapor. You are eternal. Your love everlasting, reigning on high. He's a holy, holy God. And we praise the Lamb that was slain in this particular worship song. And we offer highest praises, honor, and glory to His name each time we come here together. When we leave, I pray also others would know that God is a loving God. And no matter what we see in the world, I don't turn a blind eye to it. I can't help but think of the sufferings and things that go on in the world, but I know that God is a loving God. We are the broken. He is the healer. Yeshua is the Redeemer, the mighty one to save. You are the love song and will sing forever. bowing before you and blessing your name. So I just want to say thanks be to the Lord God who completes the work begun in us.
So kind, you gave it to me tangled. Okay, let's see. Can I be heard? Okay, great. Yeah, that's true. It's very difficult for people to hear you if you're not speaking, which is unknown to Mr. Killerhouse, a prophetic word about what I'm actually going to say today. But I don't have to be brief, because Mr. Gain tells me that I can just go on for hours, so. Oh, my wife said no. Ah. Well, because what Mr. Killerhouse was talking about with Judges was about Samson, and last night I was thinking a lot about Samson and his incredibly gorgeous hair that he must have had, and that long flowing hair. If it's not completely obvious, I do identify a little bit with Samson, and I used to think about how I used to wonder exactly how does his hair give him all that power? How is that possible that, you know, you can just have long hair and be made so strong, and you know, me, I have long hair, and I still feel pretty weak, so there must be something going on there. So actually, I think I'll just read, because one young Killerhouse, I think it may have been Mama Kay, it may have been Ruthanna, but it was a long time ago, told me I need more scripture in the things that I say, so I'll read. In Judges 16, part of Samson's story. Once Samson went to Gaza and eyed a prostitute there, so he went to her. The Gazites were told, "Samson has come here," so they surrounded him, lay in ambush for him all night at the gate of the city, and kept quiet all night, saying, "When morning light comes, then we will kill him." Little did they know. But Samson lay in bed till midnight, got up at midnight, grabbed the doors of the city gate along with the two gateposts, and pulled them up bar and all. Boy, that's really strong. Then he put them on his shoulders and carried them up to the top of the mountain that is near Hebron. It came about afterward that he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. How many individuals does he happen to desire in this whole Samson story? Three? Yeah. Yep. Yep. I'm sure there were more. So the Philistine lords came up to her and said to her, "Coax him. See where his great strength comes from, and by what we may overpower him, so we may bind him to subdue him. Then will each of us give you 1,100 pieces of silver." Wow, that's a lot of silver. I'll tell you what I could do with that much silver, but we don't have time. So, So Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me, please, where does your great strength come from? How could you be bound to subdue you?" You know, what a question to ask somebody. I don't know exactly how I would respond to that, but I don't think it would look something like, "If they bind me with 7 fresh cords that have never been dried, then I would be weak and be like any other man." Yeah, Samson has this way of playing with people, because, you know, if somebody asked me that, I might be a little bit upfront and say, "Oh, I'm not going to answer that question." But he has this fun. And so, you know, the Philistine lords brought up to her 7 fresh cords that had never been dried, and she bound him with them while an ambush was waiting in an inner room. "The Philistines are upon you, Samson," she said to him. But he broke the cords just as a strand of straw snaps when it touches fire, so his strength remained unknown. Delilah said to Samson, "Oh, you deceived me! You lied to me! Now tell me, please, how can you be bound?" He told her, "If they only bind me with new ropes never used for work, then I will be weak and be like any other man." So Delilah, believing this grand new lie, took new ropes, tied him up with them, and said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." Yet while the ambush was waiting in the inner room, he snapped them from his arms like a thread. So Delilah said to Samson, "Up to now, you've mocked me and told me lies. Tell me how you can be bound." He told her, "If you weave the 7 locks of my head with the web of a loom." So she pinned it with a pin and said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." But he awoke from his sleep and pulled away the pin of the loom and the web. And so Delilah, finally, she says, "How can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? This is 3 times you've deceived me and not told me where your great strength comes from." Now, I'm thinking, she's asked the same question several times, and he's given all these different responses. I don't know exactly how bright Samson is to to continue hanging out with this individual, with Delilah, and to you know, it's pretty clear, at least from our standpoint, that she wants to subdue him for some reason, and clearly it's so that the Philistines can take him away. But, you know, he just doesn't get it, you know. So now it says, "Now it came about when she nagged him daily with her speeches and kept bothering him, his soul was annoyed to death." I looked this up in another translation and it says the same thing: his soul was annoyed to death. I wonder, you know, what does that feel like? Like, I've been pretty annoyed before, but to have your soul annoyed to death, boy, she must have really nagged him. And good on her for keeping him on his feet, but man, anyway, so he divulged to her all his heart and said to her, "No razor has ever been upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If I am shaved, then my strength will go from me, and I will be weak and be like any other man." And so this is in part why, to me, I always thought that his hair is what is responsible for his strength, because having shaved it, his strength must go away. Now, when Delilah realized that he had confided to her all his heart, she sent and called for the Philistine lord, saying, "Come up this time, for he has told me all his heart." So the Philistine lords came up to her and brought the silver in their hand. Then she made him sleep upon her knees. Oh, how sweet. And called for a man and had the 7 locks of his head shaved off. I'll tell you, if that happened to me, I'd be very upset, because I love I love this long lock. It is coming to perhaps to a time when maybe it should go. But for now, yeah, please, if you're going to cut my hair, do it while I'm awake and know about it. Yeah, can you imagine? He and being a Nazarite, he probably also had to abstain from drinking wine and eating grapes and all of those other things. So he's not under the influence, except, of course, under the influence of lust of this Delilah. But otherwise, pretty heavy sleeper. So she even began to humiliate him while his strength departed from him. Then she said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." When he awoke from his sleep, he thought, "I'll go out as at other times and shake myself off." He did not comprehend that Adonai had departed from him. Then the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes. They brought him down to Gaza and bound him with bronze chains, and he became a grinder in the prison. However, the hair of his head began to grow again after it was shaved off. So when I read this passage now and I look at that, I see that maybe it's not exactly that it's his hair that gives him this strength. If we look back to earlier when Mr. K was describing the 13th chapter of his around when he was born, it says we'll start in 24. Then the woman bore a son and called his name Samson. So the boy grew up and Adonai blessed him. The Ruach Adonai began to stir him in Mahane Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol. And so there's, as he said, a clear indication that God is setting this man apart. And he has also taken a Nazirite vow, as described in Numbers 6. So I think that if we first look at some of the other examples of Nazirites, I should just look and see here. Nazirites. Luke 1:15 describes John as being a Nazirite, and in 1 Samuel 1:11, Samuel is described as being a Nazirite, and yet they don't have this particular strength. Their hair must have been quite as gorgeous as Samson's, but they don't have this strength. I'm certainly not strong, although granted, I'm not taking a Nazirite vow. So his strength isn't coming from his hair, and I'm sure all of you already know this, but it's coming from God and his blessing upon him, that he was set apart for the reason of taking Israelite out of the Philistine control, and he's been given this strength, yet he squandered his life, and he just allowed this Delilah to cut his hair. And, you know, it reminds me of all the other individuals who just, you know, they have like their, what is it, Jacob and Esau. So Esau's birthright, just giving it up for some lentils. Here Samson is giving up his strength that has been given to him by God. Just to stay with this woman, Delilah. So it's important to think about, you know, where does our strength come from? Where is our faith? And how should we treat the gifts that God gives us? How should we treat ourselves and what we do? How should we do those things knowing full well that God has set us apart from the rest of the world? So in 23, this is 16:23 in Judges, "Now the Philistine lords gathered to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, as they said, 'Our God has given our enemy Samson into our hand.' When the people saw him, they praised their god as they said, 'Our God has given into our hand our enemy and the destroyer of our country, who has slain many of us.' Now it came about when their hearts were merry that they said, 'Call for Samson, that he may amuse us.' So they called for Samson from the prison, and he did make them laugh when they made him stand between the pillars." You know, what is it with, like, Delilah and all of these people making fun of Samson? Why do they do that? Our enemies constantly mock us for, you know, I guess thinking about just mainstream Christianity and all sorts of things. Everybody's always mocking us for the, you know, the things that we do and how we might fall and stumble. But even though we can fail sometimes and maybe tell our friends exactly where our strength comes from, God still loves us and is faithful to save us in our time of need, as we will soon see. Then Samson said to the lad that held him by the hand, "Let me feel the pillars on which the temple rests, so I may lean on them." Now the temple was full of men and women. All the Philistine lords were there, about 3,000 men and women on the roof looking on while Samson was amusing them. Then Samson called out to Adonai and said, "My lord Adonai, please remember me and please strengthen me only this once, O God, so that I may this once take revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes." Then Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the temple rested and leaned on them, one with his right hand and the other with his left. And then Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." He bent with all his might so that the temple fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those whom he killed during his life. Samson, who has been shaved, didn't get his strength from his hair. He got it from God. But more so, even after it left him, he had enough faith to know who his God was and that he was made separate for a purpose. And he knew that he could call out to God in his time of trouble. He knew that God was faithful to save, and indeed, he did save him. Of course, not from death, but he did allow him to take vengeance on the Philistines for his two eyes. So there's a bit of supernatural things going on here. Samson has this great strength that's been given to him. But I was curious if there's anybody who knows about what our strongest superpower is. What is the strongest, maybe I'll give you a hint, the strongest muscle in your body? Does anybody know? That's very good. Any other guesses? What did you say, Mr. Dean? The tongue. So it is not by strength. I've looked this up. So scientifically, not by, you know, physical strength is our tongue the strongest. But if you think about everything that you are able to do using your tongue, you know, Samson was missing his eyes, and in fact, he also lost his strength at that point, but he still had a tongue to call out to Adonai. We still have, you know, I'm here preaching to you so that you can hear me. I am changing the very fabric of the air around me so that you can all know what's going on in my mind and in my heart. We have this power, this voice of ours, and we have a big job to do, to make disciples of the nations. And so in thinking about just how powerful our voice can be, it's also important to know that we can be powerless if we're not speaking. And of course, there are times to be silent, but also times to speak. So to give a bit of a testimony, the other day, Tuesday actually, after you know, the day was over for my work at Wild Earth, which some of you know that I'm doing, we just had a get together with my other coworkers at one of their houses, and you know, all this time that I've been spending with them, you know, educating kids in the wild, I've began to notice that they're very, very open, actually, about what they believe. And, you know, I hear a lot about witchcraft and all sorts of other things that, you know, can be very hard for me to hear because of what I believe. And yet they don't have any, I guess, they don't have any sort of filter for that. So why should I have a filter about what I believe? So while I was at this this gathering, one of the individuals there was speaking about this this supernatural experience he's been having. I won't get into full detail, but he was explaining, like, he constantly hears these animals whenever he's doing this one particular thing. He hears these animals, and there's this question that he constantly asks. I don't remember exactly what it is, but the response that he gets is over and over again that he needs to be a servant. And now I don't actually know by what power it is that he's hearing this message, but I thought it was important to give my perspective on those sorts of things, because for him and actually somebody else was speaking to him about this. I was listening to her response to him about it, saying, you know, well, you know, if you don't want to do it, then you don't have to. And of course, that's in fact true. We can actually make our own choices, because we were given the freedom of choice to choose God and to choose, you know, other things. And so, you know, with that in mind, I don't know what is in particular is, you know, involved in his life, but I gave my response, my perspective, and that was to show him, it was really to give him an anecdote about my life, which is I've been dealing with trying to figure out what my purpose is in all of going to Bard and like becoming a teacher. I never would have chosen for myself to be an educator. Before I began college there, I was very certain that I wanted to, you know, just hang out in the woods and cut trees all day, or perhaps, you know, my real passion, which is engineering. But every step of the way in my entire life, God has closed the door for engineering, and honestly has been speaking to me quite a bit about being an educator, something I seriously didn't want to do. And then, you know, being up here, I never in my life thought I'd be standing at a pulpit or anything like that. But anyway, so I explained to him that I've been struggling with this thing that I didn't want to do, but the God that I believe in, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has presented this opportunity to me over and over again. And because of my faith, I explained to him that my wife and I, we prayed about it, and we heard two different messages. These are things that I actually told him. And, I explained to him that I heard the Lord say that I am bigger than you, and that my wife heard the word that, just simply asking her if she trusted him. And together we took those two things and saw that God indeed wanted me to go into college to do this experience and to become an educator. And even going through that entire very long two semesters of hard academic work, I think doubly difficult, because I just wasn't motivated to do it. And yet I still got through it, and, you know, thank God, got some pretty good grades, you know. Anyway, so I'm explaining this to him, and then it occurred to me also, just to continue with this testimony, it occurred to me during Jerusha's baby shower, when the men were having their meeting, that that God, in fact, is not just doing this because he's God and he says so, but also, I mean, yeah, because of that, but also because he actually values me and values what I value. And And so, you know, what I discovered was part of the purpose of me even going through this experience and being an educator of children is to do the one thing in my entire life I've always wanted to do, which is to be a father and to be a good one at that. And so the interactions that I'm having with these children, maybe it won't be a perfect transition from the field into my own personal life, but I believe that the Lord is showing me exactly what it is part of what the purpose of this whole ordeal is for me, and that in fact it's not just something I'm going to be miserable for the rest of my life for, but will enjoy and I'm glad that I actually listened to the God that does know more than I do, and so I'm explaining to this to him, and I was still like going on, but a little petering off, and you know, a couple of people were chiming in, just like how grateful they were to hear my perspective and to hear my testimony, and said even though we don't have the same perspective, we really appreciate it, and we're just like so happy to hear what I had to say. And so, you know, oftentimes we can get caught up in, you know, our own feelings of who we are, and just shame that doesn't belong in a believer. Shame of what we believe doesn't belong to us. We shouldn't have to be shameful, but in fact should be completely open about who we are and just what God has done in our lives. And I think that voice that we have is the strongest tool that we have in defeating the enemy in all of the grounds that he reveals himself on. If it's your coworkers, your friends, your family, maybe it's standing up here and talking, or going over there and worshiping, your voice can change the very futures of the people that you are speaking to, and it needs to be used.
So I was also asked by Peter to prepare a drash, but I'm going to try to genuinely keep it brief, just make a few observations. You know, Bill, when Bill was up here, he was talking about his own weakness. And, you know, do you know that Paul boasted of his weaknesses? He boasted in his weaknesses because God's strength is made perfect in weakness, Bill. So, you know, that's what I think of when I hear you talking about your weaknesses, right? God's strength is perfected in weakness. And, you know, everything about Bill's life and the life of his family, to me, is a lesson. You know, I cannot look at them and not be overwhelmed with the provision of God. They have lived out their life in the provision of God, and God has just taken care of them and provided for them and done miraculous things. I mean, I can't imagine when Bill was younger, he thought he was going to have 6 children. They were all going to go on and have college degrees, and they were all going to be, you know, successful in different phases of their life. And I think God has surprised them repeatedly with his blessings in truly unusual ways. And it's really something to watch. I'm always blessed when I spend time with the Keller Houses or look at the things that God has done in their lives. And Bill also mentioned, you know, when he came up and blew the shofar, I was thinking earlier, someone needs to blow the shofar. It just kept coming into my mind that we need to blow the shofar. And, you know, the first thing I thought of when I heard that Eddie had passed on to better health was the verses in John from this week a seed needing to fall in order to produce a harvest, and that if the seed remained in the wheat, it would die, right? And, you know, I think of that shofar blow was to me, it was the raising of the one dead person we know today, the one person who died today, who's being risen from his grave this day. And I think it's telling that, you know, I mean, I think it's no coincidence that Eddie did that, made that move on the Shabbat. Some of the old timers here know that the original name of this congregation, in typical Eddie fashion, I guess it's not really correct Hebrew, but it was Shabbat Hayim, which means life, yes, life rest, Sabbath life. And so, I mean, it just seems so telling, and that this would happen on a day when the reading talks about having a seed fall and produce a great harvest. You know, that certainly describes Eddie's life and Yeshua. When a believer allows his seed to die and follows Yeshua into his death, you know, he Yeshua empowers his life and brings him through to eternity. And that's what, you know, all kind of struck me about this day. Now, sadly, I have to take a short break and tell a terrible joke that will, I hope, won't offend any of you. When Craig was talking, and when Bill was talking about Samson, right, I just couldn't avoid thinking of this joke about, you know, God and Chuck Norris. We're walking together in the garden one day, and God turned to Chuck and he said, "You know, Samson killed 1,000 with the jawbone of an ass." And Chuck, who was always quick-witted, replied, "Well, that would be one way to do it." And God, you know, showing his usual perfect foresight, said, "I knew you'd say that." So I'm sorry, I had to share that with Craig. That's why he was laughing when Bill was talking. And I just felt like I had to share it with you. But, Samson was the real-life mythical Chuck Norris, right? I mean, he was the guy who actually did kill 1,000 with the jawbone of an ass, and he was empowered by God. I think it was great that Craig talked about, the problem was not the cutting of the hair per se, and it wasn't, you know, so it is amazing, right? Samson's such a typical man. He's strong as all get out. He can slew hydras and kill thousands of Philistines, but a beautiful woman can make him do stupid things, right? Really stupid things. And so he tells her, "No, I'm saying it's the fault of the man that a beautiful woman can just make you do stupid things." He's, you know, and I see a lot of myself in Samson. You know, he tells him these wrong ways that his strength can be undermined. And then he unwittingly tells them the way that his strength actually can be undermined, which is by cutting his hair, because that is a violation of his Nazirite vow. And that takes him out of the set-apartness to God, and that removes his strength. And I love it that, you know, at the end of his life, Samson begged God to make him strong one last time so that, you know, he could show forth God's power and he could kill more Philistines than he ever killed in life for the good of Israel. there's so much that's telling there. I appreciated everything my brothers had to say. And I think, everybody's hearts are heavy and rejoicing in a weird way at the same time today, and I know it's a difficult day for many in the congregation, just realizing, you know, that this has come to pass on this day. But everybody here everyone who's been here for, and it's kind of amazing, right? The congregation was started by Eddie, and when I look back and realize He was leader of the congregation for quite a bit less than a third of the congregation's life, you know, and that's another illustration of, you know, the work that a believer set apart to God starts, it goes on, well, you know, far past what the original person does. You know, God continues to water and reap from men who set their lives apart to God, and Eddie was certainly that. I mean, Eddie was, you know, Eddie's enthusiasm for God, Eddie's outspokenness, his energy, his willingness to leave everything he knew behind and go wherever God put him, whether it was, you know, leaving his building work behind to go become an elder in Morning Star, and then from there, you know, leaving the congregation behind because he felt the most important place for him to minister was in Israel. This is where the final battles are won. This is where, you know, the way of Yeshua to return is opened. And Eddie wanted to be a part of that, and he was a part of that. And it's just an astounding example to see him, you know, just, you know, so radically leave behind his former life and at so many stages. He was a man sold out to God, and God used his weaknesses. Eddie had weaknesses. We all know some, you know, anyone who knew him knows some of Eddie's weaknesses, but he turned those things weirdly into strengths, and it allowed God's power to be made perfect. And so, you know, let's celebrate the moment together. Let's celebrate, you know, what Eddie was to all of us and to many, many, many others. And enjoy some time together in the back. We'll gather up here and finish do a little bit of singing and dancing. Don't be put off by it. You don't have to be a good dancer, and you don't have to be. You don't have to know what we're doing. Just sort of fake it. That's what everyone else does.